Hello and welcome to Legal Lad's Quick and Dirty Tips for a More Lawful Life. I'm your host, Adam Friedman. Today's topic, healthcare showdown at the Supreme Court. And now, your daily dose of legalese. This podcast does not create an attorney-client relationship with any listener. In other words, although I am a lawyer, I'm not your lawyer. In fact, we barely know each other. If you need personalized legal advice, contact an attorney in your community. Almost 2 years after Congress passed the Obama administration's proposed healthcare reform, the Affordable Care Act, or ACA, the Supreme Court convened to consider the constitutionality of the new law. Specifically, the court gathered to hear the appeal of a decision by the Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit striking down the central component of the law known as the individual mandate. The Supreme Court scheduled an unprecedented 6 hours of legal argument spread out over 3 days for the case. In today's episode, I'll explain the four major issues that the court is considering and which way the justices seem to be leaning. But first, I want to let you know that this podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/legal. Back to the issue. The first issue before the Supreme Court was whether the Federal Anti-Injunction Act barred the court from even considering the challenge to ACA. The Anti-Injunction Act forbids taxpayers from challenging federal tax provisions before the tax is collected. In other words, if you want to challenge the validity of a federal tax, you're supposed to pay the tax first and then fight with the IRS over a refund. Now, even though ACA isn't exactly a tax law, the penalty for failing to obtain health insurance is a form of tax, or at least the ACA inserts the penalty provision into the tax code. The odd thing is that none of the parties to the ACA lawsuits argued that the lawsuits are barred by the Anti-Injunction Act, not even the Obama administration, which, of course, opposes the lawsuits. However, the Federal Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit concluded that the Anti-Injunction Act applies, and so the Supreme Court justices decided that they would have to address the issue for the sake of completeness. If the High Court rules that the Anti-Injunction Act applies, then all legal challenges to the individual mandate will have to be postponed until 2014, when the mandate and its penalty provision actually kick in. During the Supreme Court argument, none of the justices appeared to be particularly persuaded by the Anti-Injunction Act argument. In fact, as I mentioned a minute ago, none of the parties to the lawsuit were either. The court had to appoint a special lawyer to present the argument in favor of applying the Anti-Injunction Act so as to delay the case. But most court watchers predict that the justices will not apply the Anti-Injunction Act, but will go on to rule on the merits of the ACA. Which brings us to Issue 2, the individual mandate. On the second day of oral argument, the Supreme Court got to the central issue, the individual mandate. This refers to a provision of ACA that creates a legal duty for virtually all individuals in the U.S. to obtain health insurance that meets federal standards by 2014. The constitutional issue is whether Congress has the authority to impose such a mandate. The Constitution grants only certain enumerated powers to Congress. In the case of ACA, the government relies mainly on the constitutional power to regulate commerce among the several states. Now, even though individual healthcare decisions may not involve interstate commerce, the Supreme Court has previously held that Congress has the power to regulate economic activity that, in the aggregate, will affect interstate commerce. In 1942, the court upheld New Deal regulations that dictated the amount of wheat a person could grow for his own family's consumption. That was a case called Wickard versus Filburn. However, opponents of ACA point out that Congress has never used its power to compel individuals to purchase a product or service whether they want it or not. Despite some early predictions that the mandate would be overwhelmingly upheld, the oral arguments revealed a Supreme Court deeply divided. A number of justices expressed concern about the implications of the individual mandate. Justice Kennedy wondered whether the government could create commerce rather than merely regulating commerce. while Justice Scalia worried about the government creating future individual mandates for other personal matters, like mandates to eat our broccoli. Other justices, however, clearly supported the individual mandate. Justice Breyer, for example, argued that not long after the Constitution was ratified, Congress created commerce by chartering a national bank, thus setting an early precedent for the constitutionality of legislation that initiates commerce. On the third day of argument, the court looked at an issue called severability. This issue comes into play only if the court does strike down the individual mandate, in which case the court also has to decide whether the rest of ACCA can survive without the mandate. The law is over 2,700 pages long, so suffice it to say there's a lot in there besides the individual mandate. However, the individual mandate is the part that is supposed to make the whole thing affordable. By requiring younger, healthier individuals to get health insurance, ACCA aims to broaden the insurance pool and thus bring down premiums. Unlike many other laws, ACCA does not expressly address the severability of its provisions. The Obama administration argues that if the mandate is struck down, then only two closely related sections would also have to be jettisoned. The rest of the law could continue to operate. The challengers of the law argue that the mandate is the heart of the ACCA, and thus if the mandate goes, the whole statute must go with it. Here again, the Supreme Court appeared to be deeply divided. The more liberal justices seemed to agree with the administration that the law could be selectively struck down, while the more conservative justices seemed more inclined to think that the whole package must either stand or fall together. Just a quick reminder, this podcast is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature and featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. I really enjoy Audible books. I listen to them on the subway when I'm commuting, and I love them on long road trips. For our listeners, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. If you're interested in today's topic, for example, one audiobook you might want to consider is Landmark, the inside story of America's new healthcare law and what it means for us all. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/legal. That's audiblepodcast.com/legal. Also on day three of oral argument, the Supreme Court considered whether the ACCA's expansion of Medicaid is valid. The new law requires that states must dramatically expand their Medicaid rolls, opening up the program to all individuals under 65 with incomes up to 133% of the poverty level. States that refuse to participate in this expansion of Medicaid risk losing all federal Medicaid funds. For most states, that's more than $1 billion a year. The legal issue is whether the Medicaid expansion represents improper coercion of the states. On two previous occasions, in 1937 and 1987, the Supreme Court stated that the federal government cannot use its spending power to coerce states into adopting particular policies. However, the court has never actually held that the federal government has engaged in such improper coercion, so we don't have a clear precedent. At the Supreme Court, the coercion argument faces an uphill struggle. Since the federal government is underwriting 90% of the Medicaid expansion, at least in the early years, many justices expressed skepticism that there was any real coercion going on. Still, a number of justices, including the Chief Justice, asked some pointed questions of the administration's lawyer about whether there are any constitutional limits on the power of the federal government. A decision in this case is due out in the summer, probably June or July, and so until then, stay tuned. Thank you for listening to Legal Lad's Quick and Dirty Tips for a More Lawful Life. You can send questions and comments to legal@quickanddirtytips.com. Please note that doing so will not create an attorney-client relationship and will be used for the purposes of this podcast only.